This is the Frogcast.
Well, did you miss us? Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Frogcast. We are here tonight to talk about some of the big changes that have been going on with the TCU coaching staff, as well as some changes that did not take place. We're going to look at the meltdown in both Austin and College Station. We're going to walk through the Big 12 Bowl preview, as well as break down what we see happening between TCU and Oregon in the Alamo Bowl, which I have dubbed the What If Bowl. This could have been a playoff game, but we're going to enjoy every minute of it. That and so much more on this week's episode of the Frogcast. Well, every message board and every site that just kind of spits out TCU information that is not set up by the university, in the end, all got their start, directly or indirectly, from KillerFrogs.com. And we had Wes Phelan on a couple months ago and had him tell us the history of Killer Frogs and the way that fans started to come together online about 20 years ago in order to connect, to vent, and then later in life be able to celebrate. Well, one of the anchors of Killer Frogs, Scott Nix, the one who really took it to the next level, made it what it is today, sadly passed away last week. And so we pray for his family, we grieve with them, we hate his loss, because he has done so much for this university and so much for this athletic department that he cared about so very, very much. One of the things that he got launched was the Wednesday night show at Brewster's during the season, where they would bring in former players and members of the university. And in kind of a fitting way, his very last thing that he did in public for TCU was to host the athletic director, Chris Del Conte, at the Killer Frogs Wednesday night gathering. Daniel, you were there for that event, and you were one that really got connected to kind of the TCU online community in the last couple of years through Killer Frogs. What was that experience like to be there that very last night with Scott?
It was kind of surreal looking back. While I was there, it just felt like a normal Killer Frogs event. It was probably... It wasn't a huge crowd, I think, because it's kind of the off season. I also went earlier in the year when LT was here, and that place was packed. But this was a good sized crowd, and I know he had a lot of family there because I was sitting close to him, so I was able to decipher who kind of was who. And it was a good show. Scott was like he always was. The first show I went to, I hadn't actually met him. I'd been online, and I think he had given me a warning point or so, and. Anyway, but welcomed me like I was just, part of the family, known him forever. And, that was fun. It felt good to just instantly be, included like that. And then just last week when I went, he instantly recognized me. He knew who I was. He remembered who I posted as, everything. And that was really cool. I'm actually easily forgettable in a lot of ways. But, yeah, he did. And it really sucked because when I was leaving, he was actually at the door talking to Chris Del Conte's wife, and I just walked out and said, "All right, thanks, I enjoyed it." And he just kind of gave him a tap on the shoulder, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, thank you for coming." He thanked me for my contribution to the board, which...
Which is minimal, I might add.
Of course. And I know, it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, "Really? All right." But and I walked away, and then like a few hours later, I woke up in the middle of the night, get something to drink, and I was just looking at my phone, and Wes had just posted what all happened, and I just kind of was like stunned for about an hour until I passed back out. And it just, man, it's just still, it's a shock, it's just something that's just always there, it's that weird feeling that, it's like just disbelief.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary, and all those emotions come together, and Scott was one that was able to carry a lot of things on his big shoulders for our university, and we all kind of share in his loss. One of the little tidbits I just will add is I messaged him the week before the Baylor game and told him that I was going to be back in town. I hadn't been to a game in, 9 years, and, he used to host a tailgate party for Killer Frogs, and he wrote me and said they don't do that anymore, but he said, "I've got just a couple of tickets left, and you can be my guest to the Letterman's tailgate party." Now, this is a guy I hadn't seen in 9 years and knew me nothing other than a random poster on the board. And that kind of summarized the heart that he had and his desire to see Horned Frogs connect. So God bless him. Hope everything goes well for his family moving forward. I know it'll be very, very difficult. And our family online is going to miss him. For everybody that's connected directly or indirectly to Killer Frogs, Scott, thanks a lot. You helped make a lot of this happen. Well, we had followed along the drama that kind of started to bubble up during our last episode of the potential for us to lose one of our, if not both, of our offensive coordinators. We had Sonny Cumbie that was a target for the University of Texas. They were going to back up the Brinks truck and give him who knows how much money and hand him the keys to the offense to be able to get Texas back on track. At the same time, we had both UNT and later Tulane, from what we understand, that were engaged in trying to attract Doug Meacham to come and be their head coach. And so we went in a moment of a few days from believing that we were going to lose one, if not both, of our offensive coordinators to where we are able to keep them both. Trey, are you surprised in the way this whole thing went down? And I know anytime we can laugh at the other programs in the state, we can do it. But did you ever think you'd see the day where somebody would stay for a lesser job with less money at TCU rather than take that big promotion and big pay raise to Texas?
Well, yeah, I am a little shocked because, honestly, I went into this feeling like we were going to lose one of them. I never got really panicked enough to think that we were going to lose both of them. But I did have just a feeling that we would lose one of them. And, when that UNT stuff came out with Meacham, I mean, I guess it made a little bit of sense from the standpoint of he wouldn't have to move his family. Cause I guess just based on what I've read other people say, that was important for him. But I just didn't think that UNT job made sense. Like, that's such a trash job. And no disrespect, but that's a terrible, terrible job to take. He could get a much better job. And so that kind of, confused me a little bit. And then the Cumbie and Texas thing popped up. And, yeah, I thought he was going to take it. Not because necessarily that he wanted to be there. I don't know if this is going to make sense, but like he just felt like I thought he felt like that was the job he needed to take, is more high profile, which would kind of help his career path. And I love that he turned him down. I mean, it really shows what TCU has going on here. I mean, not only do they have, I mean, he's going to be able to work with much better quarterbacks here, and also has much better job security here. So it's awesome to see. I love every minute of it. And it's looking like we're going to keep both of them, which is even more amazing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that we're going to be able to hold on to both of these guys. In the way that the rest of that story played out, let's just take a minute and laugh some more at Texas if we haven't done that enough already. They get turned down by Sonny Cumbie, who drugged them along. And I don't fault a guy for taking his time to make up his mind on that issue. But they Charlie came up on Sunday. It wasn't until Wednesday that he told them no. They turn around and they go after the Tulsa offensive coordinator, who doesn't even call the plays either. And he basically turns them down, which I just thought was the funniest thing in the world. From what I understand, they lowballed him on the offer, and he's like, no, thank you, I don't need that. And they put everybody and their cousin that's got a job description and a big title on a private jet out of Austin to go up to Tulsa and beg their offensive coordinator to come down here and take this job. And they gave him a heck of a lot of money, man. I would have called plays for $500,000. You didn't need $850,000. So, oh, man, was that fun to watch. And we were joking about this before the show started. Gilbert that took the job from Tulsa, he even brought his buddy along to make $550,000 to coach the offensive line. So they fired Joe Wicklund from Oklahoma State that they brought and still owe Oklahoma State $500,000 in a court case. And now they're ponying up money for 2 and 3 year contracts for a job that they're probably not going to have for one season. And I just think it's freaking amazing. So that's what I love to see with Texas suffering. So, Daniel, do you have any thoughts on being able to hold on to these coaches as well as watching the struggle that the Horns had in this whole process?
Yeah, my experience, if you will, was pretty much parallel to, you know, how y'all's went. I was following it along, and you know, part of me thought, okay, you know, Cumbie might stay. You know, there's so many benefits that we've got, and, you know, blah blah blah, all the reasons y'all already listed. But at the same time, being a longtime fan, you know, just conditioning, I guess, you know, TCU loses this kind of thing. And, you know, I kept refreshing and looking at Twitter and all this stuff, and it finally came out, and I was just like, ha, you know, we did, you know, he turned them down, they suck, blah, blah, blah. And, but then, like, just quick turnaround, then the Tulsa guy turns him down, and I was just like, oh my God, this is hilarious, because, you know, I can see staying at TCU, you know, from an outside perspective or whatever, but from Tulsa, good Lord. And, you know, they ended up talking him into it, but that's hilarious in its own right, because they had to go up there and just beg him and throw money at him. And the president of the university had to go up there. That's insane. So it's just hilarious. And just to see the state that they're in, and the fans' reactions, oh, my God, you know, Cumbie, no, he's just not man enough. He's not up to the challenge, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's why everyone hates Texas, so just buzz off.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, Trey, the only team that we might hate more than Texas, and we don't play them, is Texas A&M. Have you followed along with is there any quarterback left on Aggie? Do they have any scholarship quarterbacks left? What the hell is going on down there?
Man, I love it. Like, and I don't know if it was on a message board somewhere, it might have been on this podcast, but earlier this year, I know for a fact I said Texas A&M needs to be careful with these two quarterbacks they have here, because they both have talent, but, you know, play with fire and they could end up losing one, maybe two. Never in a million years did I really think they would lose two. Like, I thought one of them would probably end up transferring, but to have both of them leave your program on top of Kenny Hill transferring as well, if you're a quarterback, why would you ever want to go there? Like, obviously they have huge issues developing quarterbacks. They don't know how to use them. They don't know how to teach them. They don't know how to do anything with them, because you should not have that many five-star quarterbacks and have this kind of problem. I mean, that's embarrassing, in my opinion. That is, if that was going on at TCU, somebody would need to get fired. There would need to be major changes, because that's just, you can't have that. I mean, you cannot have that.
Yeah, that's insane. It's insane that it would happen at all, but to have it happen in the same week, you know, within just a couple days, like, all right, I'm out too, peace, you know, golly. I mean, they're really, I don't know who's worse, them or Texas.
And yeah, I've seen people say that the kids, you know, Kyle and Kyler are maybe entitled, and I don't know them, but I would assume that they might have a little bit of entitlement. But at the same time, you have to think on the flip side that Texas A&M made some empty promises. There's some other stuff going on. Like, yeah, maybe the kids are a little bit of have an attitude or whatever, but I think it's a two-sided coin there. Like, there's other stuff going on with the coaches and that side of it also. So, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like the kids got kind of grilled, especially on, like, the social media and stuff, which, like I said, I don't know, you know, any of them, but there's more to it, I think, behind the scenes than we know.
Yeah, and I think it all begins at the top. I mean, Sumlin, he's got the swag copter, and he's got the strut, and he's got the pool boy. I mean, that guy has just got everything going. And I think that house of cards of image and marketing and, you know, million-dollar barbershops, it's crashing down on them. You know, one of these days you have to suck it up and lead men. and someone seems incapable of doing that. I mean, I know we're total homers, but can you imagine Gary Patterson letting that happen? I mean, can you imagine Bob Stoops letting that happen? Bill Schneider would never let this happen. These guys would say, this is what's going to happen. You're going to do this for the good of the team, and they would figure out how to navigate that. But stumbling, he just he can't make it work. The Aggies can't get out of their own way, and he's just the 27th example of that in their entire history.
And they're just living off Johnny Manziel at this point. I mean, that's all they have going for them. I mean, they are what they are. They are what they were in the Big 12. They're a middle of the pack program that they have an overinflated self-worth, but really they're just middle of the pack. Some years they'll be better, maybe win 9-10 games, but then, you know, the year after they'll fall back to 6-6, you know, 7-5. That's what they are.
That's who they are. Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, I was just going to say, as Trey was going to say that about Johnny Manziel, I was going to say that, yeah, it's Johnny Manziel. They hit like this perfect storm of Manziel comes out of nowhere. They decide to bolt for the SEC, so that helps. And then they end up beating Alabama, and then he goes and wins the Heisman. So it's mostly Johnny, but that wouldn't happen as big a deal in the Big 12. So that whole just perfect storm of Johnny and the SEC and just all of that, and then of course that's when they got the Swagcopter, and it's fading, it's dying out, and man, it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny, and I think the part that threw me off watching all of that unfold was, all right, Kyle Allen leaves, and you're like, okay, what you were saying, Trey, one of these boys is going to be gone, one of them's going to transfer. But like that night, it started to leak out on 24/7 boards and on Twitter that, hey, Kyler Murray is probably going to leave too. And I'm like, you just won the starting job. You just had the starting job handed to you, and now you're leaving? I'm like, that's not a football issue. That is a human issue. That is a leadership issue. And it's a culture issue. And the problem is their culture is Aggies. And the only thing that's safe down there are, middle of the road seasons. But none of the sheep are safe. So that's the problem with Aggie.
We just don't get it, because if you're on the outside looking in, it can't, or whatever they say, whatever that is, the perfect cult excuse.
Yeah. On the outside, you can't understand it. On the inside, you can't explain it.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
That's what Jim Jones said, too.
That is exactly what Jim Jones said. One of my favorite moments ever is getting banned from Texas Aggs. I was on the Texas Aggies message board years ago, and they were going on about how if they could just get a recruit to College Station and all this and that. And I was like, I posted, what makes you think some urban kid from Houston's dying wish is to move to College Station and piss on the ice at the Dixie Chicken? And that got me banned, so. All right, boys. Well, moving forward, we got an exciting slate of Big 12 games going into the bowl season. Bowl season has already started. I did want to warn you, if you're one of these people that thinks we have too many bowls, just stop listening now, because when February gets here, You'll be begging to watch a MAC game on a Tuesday night. So watch these bowls. Suck up every single second of them on television. I was watching South Florida and Western Kentucky because it was on. That's just what it is. Enjoy it while you can. We're going to break down and walk through and make some picks on every single Big 12 bowl game, and then get to the end and talk about TCU and Oregon. So, Trey, we're just going to put you on the spot out of the gate here for the biggest matchup that we have in the Big 12. Big 12 champion made the playoff. University of Oklahoma is in the Orange Bowl against Clemson. What do you see as the key matchups in that game, and who do you predict as the winner?
So, if you go back to our first podcast, I've said before, Clemson was one of the four teams I picked to make it. So, I had fairly high confidence in Clemson, going into this. But honestly, I don't know. I like Oklahoma. I think, they're playing their best football of the season. After losing to Texas, they've gotten pretty much better each week, kind of hitting on all strides. So, P. Ryan, I think they have a nice, running game. Playing in the Big 12, they're obviously accustomed to playing against high-powered offenses. So I don't think, the Clemson offense will be that big of a problem. I do think it'll be a close game, but I don't know. I just feel like it's similar kind of maybe to last year's Ohio State team is, you know, they're hitting it solid right here at the end of the year playing their best football, and I feel like Oklahoma looks really strong, and so I'm going with the Sooners over Clemson in the Orange Bowl.
I agree with you. The only hiccup I have is Oklahoma got to miss Seth Russell. Oklahoma got to miss Devon Boykin, and Oklahoma got to miss Mason Rudolph for the most part. So that's the only hesitation I have.
No, I'm with you. I agree. It does when you think about it that way make you kind of pause a little bit on Oklahoma, especially you know when you look at them, you know, against TCU with no Boykin, you know, the backups that never get to play, and, you know, it comes down to a 2-point conversion. So it's like, if TCU can do that, I mean, what can Clemson do? But I don't know. I feel like they're, like I said, playing really good, and I think they win it.
I am with you. I'm pulling for them. Biased and unbiased, I'm pulling for Oklahoma. Well, Daniel, I think we can all agree I'd rather watch Oklahoma State in the Sugar Bowl than watch Baylor in the Sugar Bowl. So we got Oklahoma State taking on Ole Miss, who might have a little Big 12 revenge factor on their mind. Real quick, who do you have in this game, and what do you think it's going to take to win?
I think they're going to have to do – I think Oklahoma State's going to have to play a little better offense than they had been towards – like. Pretty much what we saw against TCU. They're just going to have to, you know, bomb it over the heads. And I don't know. I think they'll win, but I don't know how close it's going to be. I have a lot of SEC hate, so I want to just say we're going to run all over them. But you never know with the SEC because they can look really good all year, like Ole Miss did last year, and then they get destroyed by a team from another conference. Especially when playing styles are so different. So, yeah, I just think they're just going to have to run that up-tempo and just blow them out of the water. But I think Ole Miss might just have some bigger, stronger guys and just kind of out-muscle them a little bit. But, yeah, I think Oklahoma State pulls this one off.
Yeah, speaking of bombed over your head, Robert Kendiche is not playing because he fell off a fourth-story balcony and is leaving the program and going to the draft. So if he was playing, I would probably go with Ole Miss. But I'm going to go with Oklahoma State as well because I think they got the ability to light it up and to get deep. And I think we forget that front four for Oklahoma State. Those guys are nasty. I mean, they showed us they are nasty, and I think they're going to be able to hold their own against Ole Miss.
And don't forget Mike Gundy. Because he's a man.
Mike Gundy. He is a man, and he is 46. I'm going to go with him.
Right.
Yep. Well, Trey, in the Russell Athletic Bowl, we get our second favorite team. I think we can all agree with that. North Carolina. they're my second favorite team because they're playing Baylor. Baylor doesn't have anybody playing in this game. I mean, they have no one playing in this game. Are you going to go ahead and take North Carolina in this one, Trey?
Honestly, I mean, yeah, I'm in one of those bowl pick'em, you know, leagues or whatever, and I'd picked UNC even before they announced that Coleman and Stidham and all of them were going to be out because, honestly, I mean, it's a bowl game, so why would Baylor win it, you know? So there's no reason that they would win. And so, yeah, I think, honestly, now that – seriously, though, that those guys are out, I mean, I – figured Stidham for sure, but with no Coleman and all of that, I think UNC is going to win, and Baylor's going to have like 15 fans there because they haven't sold any tickets really. And I hope the Tar Heels crush them. I mean, I was reading somebody posted an ESPN article talking about, you know, their biggest win outside of the conference in the last couple of years was Buffalo, and then before that, like, who knows, I guess they beat UCLA in that bowl game. I don't know, they irritate me so bad because they could help our conference if they actually would win bowl games and schedule people out of conference, and it, you know, really help the Big 12's perception because everybody else is scheduling tough games or winning their bowl games or at least being competitive in their bowl games. And it's just like, oh, they just, it's just another reason why they made me so mad that
just we did institute
bowl
the
games,
Bay-
and win
the
games. And I don't know. It's stupid, whatever. But yeah, I think Tar Heels are going to win.
I think so too. They did initiate the Baylor rule now is what I'm calling it for the Big 12. You got to play a Power 5 team. Yeah. You got to play a Power 5 team. And there was only one team that they had in mind for that. You know, Kansas doesn't have a Power 5 team next year, and neither does Baylor. And I could give a shit whatever Kansas plays. But Baylor, they need to man up and be a man and be 40. So I'm going to take the Tar Heels as well. Well, Daniel, you got two contrasting coaches, one that everybody respects and one that everybody wishes to push into the river. So you got Bill Schneider and the K-State Schneider Cats taking on the Arkansas Razorbacks in the Liberty Bowl. Does Kansas State have the firepower to keep up with Arkansas?
If they do, I think it's going to be the same way they shove TCU around. And they do like that delayed run, and they just, you know, they got those big corn-fed farm boys, right? Just, and they're huge. And I think that's really, they did it in another game not too long ago where they were just shoving them around and just having their way with them offensively and just, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards at a time, and it works. And I think that they really don't have a lot going on for them, and that's really their best shot. Arkansas, I don't really study Arkansas that much. They always start off one way and end another, but I don't really know how they end up, you know, between that and their bowl game. But I know Bill Snyder, and I know that fat pig, Brett Bielema. So I want to say that Kansas State has a pretty good chance, but I don't know. It's kind of a tough call.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately going to take Arkansas. I just think they have too much talent, and I think they have too much speed. So they're gonna hand a loss to K-State, and that's just kind of and selfishly, I want them to win because I want Arkansas to kind of have some of that SEC bias going into next year so that when we beat the living heck out of them in Fort Worth next year that they got a chance to have looked a lot better coming down the stretch here.
Yeah, I had that thought too, but I don't know. It's hard to say, but I had the same thought also about them having too much talent. When TCU played Kansas State, I thought there's no way we got too much talent. And they ran all over those guys forever. So
they absolutely did.
That's Bill Snyder for you.
Well, there's going to be a game that might be not safe for work, and that is Texas Tech and LSU. And so the Texas Tech run defense is like 197th out of 126. I mean, this is one of the worst run defenses I have ever seen. And they are taking on the team that's probably got, God bless Derrick Henry, probably the best running back in the country in Leonard Fournette. I think it's going to be down in Houston in the Texas Bowl. Trey, what do you see with the Tigers and the Red Raiders?
Yeah, I was talking to my brother-in-law the other day because he's a Texas Tech fan, unfortunately, and we were talking, and I think Fournette's going to get his, and I think Tech has to go into it thinking he's going to get his, he's going to score a couple touchdowns, maybe, hell, 3 or 4 if things get going, but I think Tech has to take the mentality of we can't allow anybody else to beat us, get deep, score touchdowns, do anything, and just hope for the best. And honestly, I don't know. I don't know why I did it, but I picked Tech to win, and I don't really know why. I kind of think that, I don't know, when SEC teams go against high-powered Big 12 offenses, they seem to come out on the wrong side a lot of the time. So I'm thinking, yeah, Tech's going to get ran all over, but I think they're going to be able to put up some points also. So I'm going Tech, and I think it's just mainly a Big 12 kind of bias thing I have going on because I did pick a lot of Big 12 teams in the bowl game. So we'll see, but I'm honestly, like, I'm curious to watch that one. I think it's going to be one of the better of the non-New Year's Six games.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that, and I've got the SEC bias there with you. I think Tech's going to win, and I Yeah, I just think they're not going to, you know, they're going to, LSU's going to line up and they're going to have five wide and they're not going to quite know what to do with that on defense. And I give them a shot, you know. If there's a couple of coaches that are bigger dorks out there, I don't know who they are between Kingsbury and Les Miles, but I think Cliffy's going to have them ready to go and I think they're going to win. So I think he's going to like to carry some of that Big 12 pride after beating Arkansas and being able to beat LSU. So
yeah, and it helps the conference, which unlike Baylor, you know. Yeah,
unlike Baylor.
So I'd be happy to see him do it. I think that actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Daniel, the last bowl game that we have is actually going to take place right after the Alamo Bowl that night, if you want to stay up until about 4 in the morning. I think it's called the Cactus Bowl now. It used to be the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. It's like the token Fiesta Bowl's B game. And we got West Virginia and Arizona State playing out there in Tempe. West Virginia limps to 7-5. Arizona State is 6-6. Dana Holgorsen's kind of sort of on the hot seat. There's still some mild rumors that if they get blown out in this, he could still get fired. What do you see coming in a game that honestly nobody really cares about?
I don't know, because West Virginia is just not what they were. And, you know, Arizona State playing in the Pac. That's, you know, being 6-6 there, it's not horrible, but I don't know, because that's really as big a toss-up as I can think. I would think Holgorsen could pull it together, but I haven't looked at anything Arizona State's done all year, because, like you said, who cares? They're nobody this year. At West Virginia, of course, I've seen. They just don't have a whole lot going on for them either.
No, they don't. They don't have a whole lot going on. The only reason I think West Virginia is going to win is I've been out to Tempe several times. They got about five casinos within 3 or 4 miles of Sundell Stadium. So I think Dana's going to have a great week. He's going to be in a good mood. They're going to have casinos and Red Bull flowing, and he's going to be happy. And he's going to have the team ready to go. So, you know, I don't know if anybody's – if you want to look at attendance and get those shots of empty stands, is anybody from West Virginia flying out to Arizona for a January 2nd game that kicks off at 10:30 that night?
That sucks.
Yeah, that is going to be brutal. I kind of feel bad for them. So, oh, well. Well, we've listed the undercard. Let's get to the main event. We've got – TCU in Oregon on January the 2nd. We're kicking off in what is roughly prime time, about 5:30 that night in the Alamo Bowl. I've dubbed this the What If Bowl. You got you got Oregon that is 9-3, that started the season 3-3 with their injured quarterback, Vernon Adams, out of the gate. They got healthy, and they haven't lost since they were 3-3. And of course, everybody that listens to this knows that we're 10-2, the most injured team in the country, and we're a tip pass away from being in the playoff. And both these teams could have been in the playoff, if not for What If. Trey, I don't know a whole lot about Oregon, and I trust you to know a little bit more than I do. What do you see as like the one or two key things that the Frogs have to do to be able to beat the Ducks in the Alamo Bowl?
Well, I think a lot of people, if you watch a lot of college football or Oregon, you know that their spread is not necessarily the air raid, air it out pass, even though they spread it out and move fast. They run the ball a lot, and they're actually fifth this year in rushing yards per game at 287 yards. So they like to run the ball, which I think, you know, plays a little bit into TCU's hands, because we've seen TCU struggle against the deep passes and, you know, some of the other passing games in the Big 12. Not that Oregon can't pass. I mean, they still throw for a decent amount of yardage. And I think, you know, they have a dangerous offense, much like TCU, but they also have a defense that's very questionable, giving up over, you know, 36 points per game. So for me, I think if the Frogs can keep the Oregon run game in check, they can win this game. And I think, you know, when you look at a lot of past games where TCU's had to face really good rushing attacks, they fare well against those types of teams. You know, especially this year with all the injuries in the secondary. And And I feel confident in the Frogs in this one. You know, Boykin's going to be back healthy. Dotson's still up in the air as of, you know, this point. But I don't know. I'm personally kind of have a feeling that we're going to see one of those special Boykin type performances in this one, and he'll go out on top. And I'm kind of feeling a TCU 41, 35, 38 kind of game. Like, it's going to be close. I think this is going to be an awesome bowl game. I'm really looking forward to it, and I think the Frogs pull out a close one.
Daniel, you want to echo or rebut some of those thoughts from Trey that I think are dead on?
I think TCU beats Oregon's ass. How about that?
That's good. I like that.
I mean,
tweet that.
Yeah, I will. I don't know. I just, you know, Gary Patterson with a month to prepare. You know, the way we may have slipped a little towards the end in some games throughout the season, but, you know, so many things kept improving and falling into place. And I don't know. I mean, of course, Dotson makes a big difference if he plays or not. I think if Dotson plays, it's not even a question. But I think the defense will be there. And, you know, Trey brought up the good point about, you know, Oregon doing so much running. And that, to me, that sounds good because so many people stepped up as far as, like, linebacker and such. Towards the end, you know, and now with an extra month to prepare for one specific team, I don't know. I just have a lot of confidence that I kind of have the reverse feeling that I did last year. I went into that Ole Miss game nervous as hell because, you know, we had a great season, but the season before was terrible, and Ole Miss is, you know, rah, 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 SEC Landshark. And I was nervous, and we just blew them out of the water. So maybe I should feel that way because maybe I'm going to jinx it by having so much confidence, but I don't know. I'm happy that it's a super high profile game with, you know, such a big name like Oregon, but, you know, I really have a good feeling about it, and I hope I'm right.
Well, I hope you're right too. I'm going to go ahead and side with you guys. I think the Frogs are going to win. And as has been said, I think we're going to see one of those special games from Trevon Boykin. And I also think we're going to see a special game from some of those guys in the trenches that want to go out on top. I think Big V is going to have an awesome game. I think Davion Pearson is going to bring it from the first snap. I think we're going to see some of that semblance of the Peach Bowl in terms of the intensity that people bring. And they're going to talk crap. They're going to strut in the way that we like. And I think we're going to see a TCU team that is prepared, a team that is confident. And if they're healthy, I mean, I'm not saying we're going to blow the doors off of them, but we're going to be unstoppable. So that's going to feel really good. And I also think the X factor in this is if you got a month to prepare, I mean, we have the best coach in the country to do that. I mean, Mark Helfrich is a good coach. He got them the national title game. I take zero away from him. But Gary Patterson, with a month to get ready for this, he's got charts all over his kitchen ready to go for this. He is gonna have the defense ready to play and know how to shut down this version of the spread. It's just another chess match for Coach Patterson, and I think he's gonna enjoy that. I think he's gonna lead them to come out on top, and we're gonna finish the season 11-2. Not bad, considering everything that happened. Well, guys, we have come to the end of our almighty outline. You guys got anything else you want to throw in here as we wrap up our time together this week?
Yeah, I just real quick wanted to give a shout-out to all the seniors who just graduated. I know Boykin, Dotson, Aaron Green, I think Listenby. I know there was a whole handful of players that just got their diploma. So huge shout out to them. It's a big accomplishment. So it's awesome.
Number one graduation rate in the Big 12 for football. That's something to be proud of. That is something to be
definitely
proud of.
Right.
Yeah, we just don't shuffle them through PE class, you know. It is good. Good to have a degree from TCU. Good for those guys. Glad for them.
That's what it's really about, so.
Yeah, Juwan's story, too. I saw that, and actually, it kind of triggered something in my head that, you know, we cheer on Boykin and Doxson and Listenby, who's a fan favorite, but most athletes are a lot more like Juwan's story. that came here and, you know, struggled to see the field sometimes, but contributed in a way with downfield blocking, battled some injuries that ended his season early. And he's walking out the door with a degree from TCU, and he is probably more of a symbol of a student athlete than the guys we love, like Boykin and Doxson. So good for Juwan Story. I'm glad he's able to do that. And for all the other nameless athletes or names on a roster that are coming here to get this outstanding education from the school we love, good for them. Everyone, after the bowl game, to recap and talk about some things going forward, we have lined up and are continuing to line up some exciting guests for the offseason. We've got a spy at the SEC Network that is going to come on and talk with us. Mark Iztok from the NFL Network has agreed to come on our show down the road. We're going to tap into some of the recruiting geniuses as we move towards National Signing Day. Then a whole lot of other things that we're lining up here for the offseason. So we want to thank you for listening throughout the season. We want to thank you for listening tonight. So, for Trey Fallon and Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the Frogcast.